This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. A thumping victory for Senator Clinton last night, but she makes up little ground in the delegate count. Republicans lose a third straight, once safe, congressional seat. The congressman with two families, Myanmar lobbyist, resigned from Senator McCain's staff. It's Wednesday, and time for another visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin is here to bring us up to date on yesterday's votes, the end game for the Democrats, a look ahead to the last five primaries, and Bob Barr's entry as a Libertarian presidential candidate. A little bit later, we'll talk with former Libertarian nominee Ron Paul about his campaign as a Republican. And as usual, we begin with a trivia question. Ken Rudin joins us here at the Newseum. Good to have you, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And what's your trivia question?
Well, you mentioned Bob Barr running as a Libertarian and Ron Paul, a former Libertarian candidate in 1988. The first Libertarian nominee was John Hospers in 1972, as you well remember.
Of course, yes.
He got all of 2,000 votes. But what did John Hospers accomplish that John Anderson, Ross Perot, and Ralph Nader did not accomplish?
So if you think you know John Hospers' accomplishment, give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, talk at npr.org. And you can also call with questions about what happened in West Virginia and Mississippi. A little later, we'll take calls with Ron Paul and look ahead to Oregon and Kentucky. But Ken, we'll get to West Virginia in just a minute, but let's start with the election political junkies are talking about today, which was the first congressional district in Mississippi.
It's a big one, and it's the third one in a row. The Republicans have now lost three Republican House seats that they've had for a long time. They lost Dennis Hastert's seat that they've lost only twice in the last 90 years. They lost one earlier this month in Louisiana, and now this one in northern Mississippi, which President Bush won with 62% in 2004. The Republicans tried to brand the Democratic candidate, Travis Childers, as a Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama clone, and yet this guy is pro-life, pro-gun, you know, very conservative, a true Mississippi conservative, a yellow dog Democrat, as they like to say. And the Republicans failed miserably.
Vice President Cheney went down there to campaign for him.
Cheney was there. President Bush did the radio commercials for him. It was 54-46, and now there's a lot of finger-pointing among the Republicans. What's your strategy now?
And a little panic, I would think, about November.
Well, absolutely, because the last time the Democrats picked up three Republican seats in special elections was 1974. That was the Watergate year where the Republicans got clobbered in November, and some Republicans are nervous about a repeat performance this year.
Again, a huge victory yesterday for Hillary Clinton in West Virginia. In the long run, does it mean anything?
Well, it gives her the reason to stay in the race. I mean, she says she'll stay in the race until there's a nominee. And, of course, until you get 2,025 delegates, there is no nominee. But ultimately, every report I've seen, and it's been happening even including in Pennsylvania and Indiana, where she won, but. And so the but is the math. The math is that Barack Obama still has a sizable lead among delegates, both pledged and now superdelegates, more votes, popular votes, and, of course, far more states won. So ultimately, it's hard to make the case, math or logistically, how he could be denied the nomination. But she says that she's still a stronger candidate in November. She would be more likely to defeat John McCain. And as she showed in West Virginia, similar to what she showed in Pennsylvania, that blue-collar workers, white workers, and white voters, as she talked about, to her detriment probably, still support her over Barack Obama.
And she's still talking about a deal to seat Michigan and Florida. Is that in the works?
Well, it is. And, of course, Barack Obama, with a sizable delegate lead, he can afford to be magnanimous. There's a thing being floated in Michigan that perhaps she will get 10 more delegates than he will, perhaps a similar arrangement in Florida. And, again, if you're up by 170 delegates or so, 160 delegates, there's no problem giving up those delegates in Michigan.
10 or 20 delegates, exactly. and then also smoothing over differences within the party and making Florida and Michigan happier about maybe voting for Democrats in November.
And it also eases it, and if this is the part of the game plan, it helps ease Hillary Clinton out of the race. Again, the guesstimate here is that she stays until June 3rd, which is the final primaries in Montana and South Dakota.
Well, let's get some callers on the line. People believe they know the answer to our trivia question this week, which was, what did John Hosper's accomplish as a Libertarian presidential candidate that Ross Perot, John Anderson, and Ralph Nader never did. Let's go to Stephen. Stephen calling us from Redwood City in California.
Hi. I think that he broke the threshold to get federal funding.
Got federal funding. Is that the right answer?
No, that is not the right answer, although he was the first nominee, and he only got 2,000 votes, but he got something that, again, Ross Perot, John Anderson, and Ralph Nader did not get. But it's not federal funding.
Nice try, Stephen. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Jose. Jose is with us from San Francisco.
Yes, hi. I'm going to guess that he was on the ballot in all 50 states.
No, actually, he wasn't, and as it turned out, he only got 2,000 votes. He was only on a handful of states. When Ron Paul ran in 1988, I think Ron Paul got about 450,000 votes, but John Hosper's got like about 2,600 votes, only in a handful of states, just two or three states.
Thanks,
okay.
Jose. Appreciate Thanks. It. And let's see if we can try Chet. Chet's with us from Chicago.
Hi there. I believe his accomplishment was that he received an electoral vote.
And that is the correct answer. You know, usually you have to win a state to get electoral vote, but of course the electors are not pledged. They could actually vote for whoever they want. And one, even though Richard Nixon carried Virginia, one Nixon elector, a faithless elector, voted for John Hosper's.
Faithless?
Faithless,
yes. Apparently,
yes.
Yeah.
I can't
maybe
even,
just an agnostic.
I've never seen his faith.
Uh-huh.
So,
Well done, Chet.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Been a lot of news out of Myanmar this week, and it caused one presidential candidate some trouble over the past weekend.
Well, John McCain, one of his top people who are going to help run the campaign, is now turned out to be a lobbyist for the Myanmar government, and obviously that's not something you want to put on your resume, especially at a time when Myanmar is under a tremendous international condemnation over the remnants of the cyclone.
And on its own, this doesn't seem to be a big deal, but it raises questions again about John McCain and lobbyists.
Well, again, it's also a lot of focus has been on Barack Obama and his surrogate, shall we say, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, his former pastor. But there are a lot of former relationships or current relationships with John McCain that have basically escaped examination until now. James Hagee, a noted pastor, reverend who he sought his endorsement, got his endorsement. That has been kind of glossed over, and as well as his relationship with the guy from Myanmar, lobbyist.
Reverend Hagee sent a letter to the Conference of Catholic Bishops, I think, this week, apologizing for calling the church.
Regretting. I don't think he apologized. He regretted, yes.
Calling it the Whore of Babylon, was it?
Right. And he's had a whole bunch of, incendiary comments about blacks and Jews and gays, and so it's kind of a nice thing to go into the convention with.
He's glad to know that once he sent the note to the Catholic bishops, forgave him without even going to the confessional. Let's see if we can get Paula on the line. Paula's with us from Fort Mill in South Carolina.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a question. What is your take on John Edwards' incredibly high vote yesterday in West Virginia? I mean, I interpret that as a bunch of 7% of the electorate, last I heard, was saying, I'm not going to vote for a black or a woman. I'm going to vote for McCain in November.
Is that the way you see it, Ken?
No, I don't. I mean, I mean, just like you could make the case that 25% of the Republicans are not voting for John McCain, and I don't think it's because the Republicans are saying, I want to vote for a black and a woman, and I don't want to vote for a white man. I think John Edwards was always going to do well in a state like West Virginia. It was kind of a blue-collar constituency that he appealed to. And again, it may be less about a black or a woman than maybe just, maybe Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, not the kind of candidates they would support. But it was more sizable. It was certainly a sizable number. And, of course, John Edwards, you wonder about his future, too, and what he may do come the general election.
Now, he's won a sizable number of delegates in those early primaries. What's he going to do with those, or is it up to him?
No. Well, actually, as a matter of fact, all the delegates are free to vote for wherever they want to. And we just saw the case in Maryland the other day of an elected Hillary Clinton pledged delegate, Jack Johnson, who announced that he's going to vote for Barack Obama at the Denver convention.
Thanks very much, Paula.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to another story that came out, over the weekend, early this week, and that of Vito Fisella, the Republican congressman from Staten Island in New York City, who got arrested for drunk driving charges in Virginia and explained that he was there to visit his daughter, though his daughters live in Staten Island.
Well, His daughter's with his wife live in Staten Island. And, of course, he also has a girlfriend in Virginia, a former Navy officer who he had a daughter with, and which is not really that much of a scandal because, you know, the Republican Party is known as a pro-family scandal, as a pro-family party. And, of course, if you have two families, I think that's something. Vito Fisichella is in big trouble. He's the only Republican member of Congress from the New York City area. This is the seat that that Guy Molinari once held, Susan Molinari held. And he was considered a rising star in Republican circles, considered a possible mayoral candidate after Michael Bloomberg leaves. But now his future is really in doubt.
Let's see if we can get Michael on the line. Michael calling us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I didn't know if Ken was going to mention anything about the whole attorney general scandal here in Ohio.
This is refresh
Mark. Mark Dan with the investigation and the sex scandal going on.
I was in Akron a couple of weeks ago, and this was all over the papers there. And this is the attorney general who ran on a reform campaign, of course, in Ohio, and surprisingly won that election in a state that was previously Republican. That nevertheless has been caught up in a sex scandal.
Well, it's nice to know that sex scandals are equal opportunity scandals, but it's more importantly
equal opportunity career destroyers.
Well, exactly. And the fact is that a lot of Democrats ran in 2006 in Ohio blasting Governor Bob Taft and the scandals that have been in the Republican administration. And here you have now a Democrat involved in his own scandal who is refusing entreaties from other Democrats to step down or resign.
At the same time, even though Mark Dan's running mate, the governor of Ohio, Mr. Strickland, some touting as a possible vice presidential candidate.
Yes, and his name is mentioned also on the Republican side, the former congressman and former budget director, who is considered a possible running mate for John McCain as well.
But to answer Michael's question, do you think the attorney general in Ohio is going to be forced to resign?
I think it's a tremendous embarrassment for the Democrats. If they want to make the case that they changed things when they came into power in 2006, you don't want somebody being under investigation, suspicion in a sex scandal.
Michael, thanks very much for the call. Coming up, Congressman and candidate Ron Paul, stay with us. We're live at the Knight Studio in the Newseum here in Washington, D.C., and we'll take your calls at 800-989-8255. You can also send us email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.